Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of Shmurs Day, March 18th, 2024. On the show today, news, surveys, and listener questions. Then in our main segment, Imagineer Jim Scholl comes on the show with a story titled, I Really Shouldn't Be Up Here. Let's get started by bringing in the man who, if he had a nickel for every time he was confused, would be like, where's this nickel from? And then another nickel would appear, leading to even more confusion, until he's buried in a giant pile of coins. It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
It's fine, Len, but look, you know, let's be honest here. You know, if I had a nickel, we have to adjust for inflation, okay? You know, on the other hand, a quarter, you know, a Kennedy half dollar, the problem is being pinned down by that many coins, you know, with that weight would be significant. So, maybe Bitcoin? Is that the way to go? You know? So.
It's not just for felonies.
That's good. That's good. Okay, cool.
All right, Jim, let's do a quick shout out to subscribers on our Patreon channel. Thanks to everyone who subscribes to our show over at patreon.com/JimHillMedia, including Aaron Rifkind, Eric Pertucci, Lawrence Rose, Kurt Sutton, Laura Verardo Goodrich, and Bill Scurry. Jim, these are the maintenance cast members who keep the People Movers linear induction system working during its 48-year run in Tomorrowland. They say the secret is teamwork, the desire to always put on a good show, and the world's largest collection of refrigerator magnets to keep the motors turning. True story.
I was actually hoping that was where you were going to go. Two for two, Len. Two for two. Okay.
Thank you. All right. On to the news. Folks, the news is sponsored by touringplans.com. Touring Plans helps you save time and money at theme parks like Walt Disney World. Check us out at touringplans.com. All right, Jim, the big news out of Disney, I think, last week was these new discount tickets that are available. So they've got a Florida resident ticket that's 4 days. It's called the Discover Disney ticket. It's 4 days, one park per day, no park hopping. For $63 per day, including tax, or $250 with tax. Dates that you can use that are April 2nd to September 28th. Park reservations are required, but I note, Jim, that this is sort of the time frame that we expect Tiana's Bayou Adventure to open as well.
This is true.
Not only do you get access to that, but I looked at what other tickets are available right now. The cheapest four-day non-park hopper currently available is the four-park magic ticket for $422. So this Discover Disney ticket is a 40% discount on that. But if you look at the cheapest four-day non-hopper for non-Florida residents, it's just under $500. And that's for, I actually went out and looked at the cheapest possible ticket you could buy for 4 days. And so there's one that starts August 20th. It's $491. And so this is almost half off that.
You know, it's one of these things where when you look at that, and again, remember, this is a Florida resident
right.
ticket only. Right. And that fascinates me. I mean, what does this say to you about, you know, again, you know, going after this market segment for this specific period of time?
Well, I think Disney gets about half of its visitors to Walt Disney World from Florida, maybe a little less than half. And the advantage for those, I think from Disney's perspective, is they don't have the same sort of transportation costs. So it's easier to make the trip or cheaper to make the trip, right? So this is even more of an incentive, right? You can drive up for a couple of days, stay at an inexpensive hotel and pay, you know, $1,000 for 4 days of park admission for a family of four. I think that's the deal there.
I have to admit, I'm just kind of intrigued by that because you understand the ripple effect. You know, something like this, you know, it's impacting park attendance, but it's also restaurants, retail.
Yep.
You know, the whole schmear here. So, this promotion fascinates me.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the four-park magic ticket, the one that's $422, is Florida resident only. I don't think it is. But it does limit, you know, four parks, 4 days, one park per day thing. But that's still 40% off on a ticket. You know, Disney rarely discounts tickets directly, so that's impressive.
Oh, no, absolutely. And then when you factor in the park reservation, they can actually control where these people go and when, so.
It is a four-park ticket, which means you have to be able to get into four parks, I believe, right?
Absolutely, yeah. But on the other hand, you know, they can steer you into the kingdom on a less impacted day.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that's super interesting there. And we mentioned Tiana's Bayou Adventure. I note that ride vehicle testing continues at Tiana's. That was our other big news thing of the week. Jim, a month ago, somebody told me that Disney might be trying for a Memorial Day opening for Tiana's. And at the time, I thought that was like super wildly optimistic. But we've still got around 70 days from today, Monday, until then. So I'm not sure I would bet against that now.
No, I think you're on to something. More to the point, I think the folks at Walt Disney World looking over their shoulder at Epic Universe understand that it's kind of crucial that this is open and people, you know, write it and go off and evangelize about, you know, what an upgrade, what an update this is from Splash Mountain, you know, because again, you know, it just, I Mr. Shule, who will be on the show later today, often talks about intent to visit. Yeah. You know, the notion of the attractions that actually make you think, you know, I got to buy a plane ticket. I got to book a hotel room. And, you know, I think Disney really is hoping that Tiana's Bayou Adventure is that sort of ride.
It's interesting you mentioned that because I did an interview last week with the Orlando Sentinel, and the article came out on Sunday. But the question that they asked was, what kind of rides does Walt Disney World need to build to attract people to Central Florida? And I was like, so I went back and looked at, you know, survey data, and it turns out that the highest rated attractions in any Disney or Universal theme park right now are thrill rides based on multi-part beloved franchises. So things like Harry Potter and Star Wars and, you know, Toy Story and things like that are the top attractions. So those are the kinds of things that Disney needs to build. So that's what I would expect to see some sort of announcement on, you know, when D23 comes out.
Oh, no doubt. But at the same time, you know, you got to wonder, you know, in the corner office, you know, you got to really think carefully about those sorts of choices, because think about the time, think about the resources that was put into Tron Light Cycle Run for Florida. And, you know from, you know, from, you know, wearing your touring plans hat, that that didn't move the needle the way anybody expected.
No, and so I specifically said beloved franchises when we intentionally did that, because Tron is not one of the highest rated attractions in the United States. So,
well, on the other hand, in Vancouver right now, they're shooting Tron Ares, or you know, the other subtitle that goes for that film, this time for sure. You know, it's like...
We'll see on that one.
Okay, okay.
All right, Jim, on to surveys. Our friends Patty and Kent both sent in a Universal survey received after purchasing tickets for an upcoming trip. And I think there are three questions here, Jim, that were moderately interesting to me in this survey, or actually somewhat interesting. It was, one was, are you planning to visit Walt Disney World during the same time frame as your visit to Universal Orlando using your ticket? And yes, no, I considered visiting Disney, but decided against it. And then I never considered visiting Disney. Hmm. Then the other two interesting questions were, where did you hear about this ticket offer? Please select all that apply. And I think that's an interesting question, because in a few months, when Universal decides on what kind of ticket options it's going to have for Epic Universe, they're going to need to get the word out. And I think this survey tells them where they need to communicate to get the widest possible reach. So it's these answers are everything from like the Universal Orlando website to a grocery store to a travel agent to social media or ads online. So they're definitely trying to figure out where to throw their ad money for tickets for Epic Universe. Yeah.
Absolutely. Remember, the world has changed since the last time they did this in 99 with the Universal Escape and opening Islands of Adventure. I mean, you know, the notion of where are the eyeballs, you know, because, you know, again, you're not spending it on print media.
You're not putting it out in the New York Times. The last question that was in the survey that I thought was interesting was this: how did this ticket offer impact the number of days you spent or will spend at the Universal Orlando theme parks? I spent more days, I spent about the same number of days, and I spent less days. So this is, again, a question around like, what specific ticket offers do we need to make to entice you to stay longer, I think.
That is fascinating. Gonna be interesting to see the offers that get trotted out.
I'm thinking summer. Yeah, summer for tickets. Yeah, late summer. All right, on to listener questions, and we've got a whole bunch this week. Eric wrote in with a correction about the mall vendor of smoked meats that Chrissy and I were trying to remember on last week's show. It's Hickory Farms, not Hillshire Farms. My bad.
What are they? No, I'm embarrassed myself because I used to give one of these to my dad, you know, every holiday. You know, that's what you want to give an elderly person, smoked meat and cheese, you know, just usher them out the door that much quickly. You know? Here, let me put a little salt on that while I'm at it, you know.
Sulfites? Do you need sulfites? Exactly. You didn't have to preserve your dad. He was already preserved.
There we go.
Anyway, Eric, thank you for the update. You're worth your weight in summer sausage. Thank you. And then Tracy wrote in with another take on Disney's 2025 offer of free water park admission on your check-in day. And she says, I know you mentioned the idea of pre-booking Genie Plus on the horizon and how moving to 8 days cancellation policy likely ties into this. Do you think the water park reservation is also meant to serve as a deterrent for people trying to book Genie Plus on the day of their arrival? I can see two reasons for this. First, you don't want to time a bunch of reservations that won't get used if your trip into Orlando is delayed or canceled. And also, this would avoid the headache of people upset that they paid for something they can't use. Those are two very valid points.
Tracy, I think, is onto something here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure Disney has done the analysis that says for people who are, you know, who are arriving today and who also bought Genie Plus for today, how many of them actually used or got into the parks? Because I think one of the things that we noted on last week's show was that more than half of the flights coming into Orlando International Airport happen after noon, which would mean if those get delayed, then you're less likely to use Genie Plus. So yeah, valid point, Tracy. Good job. Craig wrote in with a Disney Cruise Line question, and it was this. It says, my family just booked a Disney Alaska cruise. I'm assuming you've been on one, Len, and I've wondered if there are any can't-miss excursions. We booked yesterday, and our excursion booking date is next week. We're doing two connecting rooms so that our boys can have their own room and bathroom. It's only about $800 more than a single room. So a couple of things there, Craig. One, $800 is a small price to pay for peace of mind. As I was telling Craig, like, I remember the day I walked into our hotel room that I was sharing with Hannah when she was, you know, 10, 11, 12, and thinking like, okay, it's time for her to get her own room because I can't live like this. Clothes everywhere, you know, stuff like that. So like $800, absolutely, Craig. But the second thing was, the one time I did an Alaskan cruise on Disney, I did all of my own port adventures, but I checked with Aaron Foster, who writes the unofficial guide to Disney Cruise Line, and Aaron said that the absolute best DCL excursion she's ever been on in any part of the world is the Alaskan sled dog experience, which also includes a helicopter ride on your way to pet sled dogs. Like, I can't imagine there's anything better than helicopter ride combined with getting to pet dogs. So that's...
Wow. That actually has more of an appeal to me than the cruise, but okay. Yeah,
exactly. Can we just do this? Okay. Might actually be cheaper to fly into Anchorage and just do that. Yeah. So that would be the one thing that I would recommend. All right. Jay writes in to answer a previous listener question about why Disney still sells Monsters University merchandise. Jay says there are high school students who have graduated in the last few years who watched Monsters U as elementary school kids and who might want to post on social media that they've graduated high school and attend Monsters University. Case in point, my daughter who graduated in June of 2023 and needed to get a Monsters University cap during a summer 2023 visit to Walt Disney World so she could post an image of herself wearing it on social media announcing acceptance to Monsters University. Oh, all right, there we go. That's exactly how I would do it too.
That explains everything now. I get it. And more to the point, I love that idea. You know, I've been accepted to Monsters U.
You know, there you go, Jay. So that's exactly the use case we were looking for. Thank you for that. All right. Colin writes in from Scotland with a question about Disney's Halloween and Christmas parties. He says, my wife and I are going October 29th to Schmersday November 13th, and I have some questions regarding the holiday parties. Do you have an indication of when the Halloween and Christmas parties go on sale? And for Universal, too, as we have tickets for there also, and we want to keep our options open. Oh, also, he says, with us being in Scotland, I need to work out the time zone, so we don't have much room for maneuvering with getting Halloween tickets. All right. So in 2023, Disney put Halloween party tickets on sale April 27th for resort guests, and then May 2nd for the general public. For the Christmas party, it was June 29th and July 6th, respectively. Websites usually update at around 6 or 7 a.m., Colin, so it'll be a late night for you in Scotland, but probably worth it. And then also, since we're talking about Halloween, I would expect Universal's Halloween Horror Nights tickets to go on sale pretty much any day now. Yeah, I think 2023's dates were like the third full week of March last year, and we're sort of there now, so pretty much any day now.
I guess the other thing to ask is, all right, so Colin and his wife, all right, so what do you think, they're traveling on the 29th?
Oh, that's a good question. So if they're, no, I think they're going to be there the 29th.
At that point, they're doing the parties back to back to back. So there'd be, yeah, there'd be the opportunity of the 29th, the 30th, the 31st, and every so often. In fact, let's take a look at the calendar.
Yeah, when is November of...
Yeah, they depending on the day...
It's a Friday, so maybe.
Oh, well, all right. So
November 1st. Okay. Yeah, you might have had November 1st, yeah.
Yeah, all right. And then what? There's typically a five-day turnaround?
Yeah, you know, Colin had asked about that. Like, when do the Halloween decorations come down and the Christmas stuff come up? I think in 2023, because I was there in the parks, it wasn't like an overnight thing where, you know, one day it was Halloween, the next day it was Christmas. It was actually over a few days, but it started with the last Halloween party. Like, even on Halloween itself, you might start seeing some infrastructure for Christmas stuff going up. And then by like that weekend, November 1st, 2nd, 3rd, you'll definitely see stuff up at the Magic Kingdom. So I would expect that.
The one that's going to get problematic, I think, is going to be Universal. That's my one bit of advice, Colin, is just, you know, literally the second these things go on sale, jump, especially for Universal. Because those last couple of days,
super popular, very crowded,
super popular. But yeah, I go run for Universal tickets first, then see what you could do for Disney, not so scary, and then you know, hopefully you'll have no trouble getting into those. Though oddly enough, it's always the first Mickey's Very Merry that sells out. You know, yeah. I think a lot of that these days is all of the social influencers who want to get I want to have the first picture of the gingerbread man. You know,
exactly. It's a lot of social media stuff on the first day. But yeah, that'll sell out too. I will say if you're also looking at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal, I would definitely recommend the Express Pass for that. It really cuts down on waits and it allows you to see virtually all of the houses in one full night. So definitely do that. And when so I'm going again this year, I've already talked to people who I went with last year, and we're basically trying to figure out what weekend, and then, you know, I'm actually booking a hotel on site, because I think the last time I had to leave the Hard Rock Hotel at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, hey, you know what, I should just stay here, but it was sold out. All right, last question from Jeff, who writes in after our recent talk about what Universal should put in the Springfield, USA area if the Simpsons go away. And Jeff says, I think it'd be better suited to a land called Spielberg's Sanctuary. So it's a land dedicated to the movies of Steven Spielberg. It's close to E.T. You could put a Ready Player One simulation ride where the Simpson ride is, and it would feature the race scene from the movie. Plus, you could have different ride vehicles, and the DeLorean could make a comeback. Jim, do you think I should just repeat all of that in case Universal's creative team is listening and needs to take notes?
Especially when you consider, didn't the book Ready Player Two come out in the last year or so?
I'm just saying, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't see Ready Player One until this year. Laurel was like, you haven't seen Ready Player One? And, you know, you could see her questioning the entire length of our relationship. At the time. But anyway, we watched it. It was a fun movie. I really liked it a lot.
No, it is a fun movie, but it is also one of those movies where you're like, hang on, I got to watch that again.
Yeah.
Because there's
a lot going on.
Stuff crammed into it.
Yeah. And the music was great too. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Imagineer Jim Scholl joins us with a story he calls, I Really Shouldn't Be Up Here. We'll be right back.
There are words we all hate to hear at the airport, terms like delayed or canceled. But you know what word we all like to hear when we get up to the ticket counter? Upgrade. As in, let's move that seat of yours up to business class, or better yet, first class. But you don't have to wait till you get to the airport to get an upgrade. You can do it at home, out ahead of your next trip, by getting yourself a new bag from Base. Base is the luggage line created by actress Shay Mitchell, whose goal here was to design a line of sleek and affordable bags and accessories that make it possible for you to travel effortlessly while still looking fashionable. And since I've been using my Base Weekender bag for a couple of weeks now, let me tell you, Base has thought of everything you could possibly want when it comes to a quality piece of luggage. We're talking 360-degree gliding wheels, a cushioned handle, even a built-in weight indicator. And all of those interior pockets, ugh, they're a real lifesaver when it comes to staying organized at the airport. No more fumbling with your bag when it comes to getting through security. And did I mention that to date, Base bags have received over 30,000 five-star reviews? Right now, Base is offering our listeners 15% off your first purchase by visiting basetravel.com/DisneyDish. Go to basetravel.com/DisneyDish for 15% off your first purchase. That's BEIS travel.com/DisneyDish. We thank them for sponsoring today's show. Today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. So have you adjusted to the daylight savings time yet? Me personally, it takes me a couple of days to recover from pushing the clocks forward, losing that extra hour of sleep. But speaking of an extra hour, what's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour suddenly added to your day? I know what I should say, which is do something healthy and productive, like, say, go for a walk or make time to read a book. But let's be honest here, folks. These days, a lot of us are just so busy with our day-to-day lives that we don't have time for healthy and productive. We're just trying to get things done, which is why even taking a moment for self-reflection just isn't in the cards. But you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And if you're now thinking that it actually is time for you to do some serious self-reflection, well, therapy can help. And if you're now in a place where you're thinking of giving therapy a try, well, please allow me to introduce you to BetterHelp. BetterHelp is designed to be convenient, flexible, and affordable. And because it's entirely online, BetterHelp is suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire, and BetterHelp will then match you with one of 35,000 licensed therapists based on your location, preference, and therapist availability. Look, previously on this podcast, I've talked about the deep, dark, depressing place I found myself in after my divorce. And therapy gave me the tools I needed to dig my way out of that hole, and it can do the same for you. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/DisneyDish today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DisneyDish. We thank them for sponsoring today's show.
And we're back, and we welcome in our longtime friend and former Imagineer, Jim Scholl. Jim, how's it going?
Everything's going great out here on the West Coast, although we've got 50-mile-an-hour wind, so I'm holding on to both, with both hands, my desk and microphone. So
yeah, I'm waiting for the frogs to come. I think that's next week. Jim, is it frogs next week, or is it locusts? I can't remember. What's the schedule?
Yeah. They update it normally. I mean, last week was rain, today's wind, you know, there's a plague on the horizon. Yeah. I'll keep my eyes peeled, and I'll get back to you.
All right. So we had Jim Hill. The premise of this section is the title, I Shouldn't Be Here. And I understand that Jim Scholl has a very interesting story about being in the wrong place at, I would argue, the right time. So why don't we let Mr. Scholl tell this story?
Well, just a little bit of setup first. That Jim shared this story while we were doing work on the Disney Unpacked episode for Rock and Roller Coaster. And again, it was one of these things where there's so many aspects of this job you never think of. And Mr. Scholl was sharing the story about those highway signs you blow by at, you know, 57 miles an hour. So take it away, Mr. Scholl.
Well, you're talking about the highway signs in the Gravity Building of Rock and Roller Coaster. In that, you're right. And there is a story. I mean, you have to have someone build those signs. And in this case, we had a little shop that built the very big signs, and it was located in central Orlando, not too far away from the football stadium. I mean, you probably have been there, and maybe you know the name Scenario. Have you heard of them?
I want to say they may have done some work in the Wizarding World, so I honestly wouldn't be surprised. So many people in Orlando did work on that, but yeah, I'm familiar with the name.
Well, they're one of the usual suspects, and you know, Disney turned to them to build all of those large signs that, you know, riders see as they're going through the gravity building at Rock and Roller Coaster. Now, as you go through it, you can see that the lights come on inside the gravity building to reveal those signs. And it's a blink and you'll miss it moment for riders, because after all, you're going 53 miles an hour. You're not going to see a lot. So it's more about impressions. But nevertheless, these things are large, very large. And, you know, any guesses about how many there are in that gravity building?
You know, if you told me there was more than a dozen, I would totally believe that. But I didn't realize they were that big, but that's a huge building. So there's probably a lot of them, and they are probably large.
Well, there's, you know, take your number and double it, Lynn. And the again, as I said, blink and you'll miss it. And the scenes, signs are large. You know, some of the large ones like the spotlights, they're over 50 stories or 50 feet high, 50 stories, it seems, but 50 foot in reality. Yeah, they're really, and you blow by them very quickly. Now, the reason for the story about why I shouldn't be up here is because, well, signs like the street lights and the search lights, they were being painted, but they were being painted in the scenario's workshop, their paint shop. They don't get a lot of demand for 50 foot tall signs. So, you know, as the Imagineer on duty for as creative director, I had to go and look at these and approve them. And the only place you could do that was out in their parking lot. So every afternoon, late afternoon, I'd call them and say, what do you got for me, guys? And I would then head on over to their shop there in Central Florida, and they would have laid out on their parking lot the signs. And so you'd have these, for example, the 250-foot tall searchlights laid down on their parking lot at night, because, you know, that's the only way you could see them, because remember, they are being lit by, you know, UV light, ultraviolet light to glow. But the problem with that is they're lying on the ground. You really can't validate them. You can't approve them. So the solution was, well, you know, have you heard the term get into a cherry picker?
Jim Hill, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And that's that if BioReconstruct was around in a helicopter, he would be like, what is happening here?
So here I am now in my little cherry picker, and I've got my hard hat and safety vest, and I link, you know, I tie myself, hook myself onto the cherry picker, and they lift me up into the night sky of downtown Orlando. And I'm probably now about, you know, 40, 50, 60 feet. This thing is tall and it extends to its full length. And that person standing next to me saying, well, what do you think of this? And my response is, I will get back to you as soon as the wind stops shaking this.
Yeah, exactly. Are your toes trying to reach through your shoes and grab something to hold on to? Because that's what I would.
Yeah. You just kind of, I think I left permanent marks on the metal rail. But regardless of that, you know, it's one of those jobs where I'm looking down, because you have to look down. I'm looking down at those searchlights. But at the same time, I'm trying not to truly look down, because it's only then that you realize, I'm up high and maybe I shouldn't be up here.
If you look out, it's fine. If you look out and down, that's where it gets to be. Like,
speaking of being up high and looking down, Len, you have a story to share that's tied to Illuminations, right?
Right. So I was one time I got the opportunity to stand at the top of the Canada Pavilion with Illuminations going on, because they had one of the show controls for the fireworks was over at the Canada Pavilion. So it's probably still there for Luminous. But at the time, I thought it was super cool, because it was basically, there's enough room for one person in this little control booth, but they're at the very, very top of the Canada stairs. And then at the very top of the building on the left there, and there's just enough room for one, maybe two people to be up there. But you could look directly across towards the Mexico Pavilion, where I believe there's another control pod, and you watch the show happen from there. But my joke at the time was like, can you actually see anyone if they're climbing the outside of the Mexico Pavilion from here? Because that is known to happen, right?
Yeah, that it is. But I have my own story involving heights, and this one actually dates back to 1985. I was lucky enough to be invited out by the kind folks at Disneyland for that park's 30th anniversary party. And this was the one that ran for 30 hours straight. So we walked in the door on July 16th at 11 o'clock and, you know, left on the 18th at 6 in the morning. And, you know, but the interesting thing is that Disney really tried to give those of us who were there to cover the event some different ways to look at the park. And at one point, they're like, okay, meet us out back on Main Street. And it's like, why? And it's like, well, come with us. And it's like, there's this set of stairs. I want to say it was behind the music shop there. And suddenly we're up on the rooftops of Main Street, looking down at this throng of, to be honest, really tired looking people, because they'd been there since midnight. And Mr. Schull, bear me out here, because you at some point you've been up on those rooftops. And it's one of those things where it's like, I couldn't help but think, yes, it's a wonderful view and this is an amazing way to look at this event. But at the same time, I am looking down at some really aged plywood. You know, and
exactly. How old is this plywood? How much weathering has it gone through?
Yeah, and that was the whole point of, you know, and they were very careful about step here. Don't step there. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
You know, you'll be down inside of the China shop faster than you know.
Yeah, that little area right there is known as Larry's Hole, not in a good way. Here's my question, though, Jim Hill. When you're up there, right, I know that there's forced perspective, and there are like metal guardrails designed to look like ornamentation on the top. And I guess that's a safety thing. But considering that that's forced perspective, are those little safety rails like barely knee high?
Do they actually work? The thing that made it particularly difficult, I mean, yes, the safety rails were there, but what they had done running the length of Main Street USA on both sides, on top of every building along the way, were these giant balloon sculptures of candles. So, you know, the problem is they set them up assuming, well, nobody's going to come up here during the day. We don't have to worry about them walking around them. And again, you know, so that was the thing. They're like, right, come up, we're going to see the view, walk around the candle, step on that wood. Oh, not that wood, you know, but this piece of wood. So
at night. Even better.
So,
was this a tour or a parkour course?
It was 1985. It was a different time.
Different time.
So now, continuing our festival of being places we shouldn't be, Len, can you talk about, you know, the day when you were wearing your touring plan hat? You were counting buses?
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm over at the Magic Kingdom, and one of the things we were doing was trying to figure out how long it takes your bus to go from your resort to the Magic Kingdom. And at the time, our assumption, and I think this was true at the time, was that a particular bus, call it bus number 1234, would basically go between the same resort and the same park all morning. So if you're on bus, if you're driving bus 1234. And you start off at Pop Century, you would basically just do the loop between Pop Century and the Magic Kingdom all morning. And so it was easy to write down bus numbers if you're in the Magic Kingdom bus stop. It's easy to write down the bus number and then just note how long it takes for the round trip, divide that number by two, and that's the, you know, the average time for a one-way trip, give or take, right? So I decided to sit at the Magic Kingdom bus stop and just write down the bus numbers. And it turns out that the best place for the view of that is right after you make the left turn to get into the Magic Kingdom. There's a little hill right by a monorail pylon. So it's in the shade, right? So, you know, I'm sitting down, I'm on grass, it's soft, I'm in the shade, it's fine. So I'm there for about 45 minutes. I knew something was wrong when an Orange County Sheriff car not only pulled up, but pulled up on the grass, like got as close to me on the hill as he could. And you know what it takes for an Orange County Sheriff to drive on the grass at Disney World, right? That's a thing. And so he gets out, but he's super cool. He's like, what you doing? I'm like, I told him what to do. I'm counting buses. I work for this guidebook and I had a copy of the book with me. And I'm like, you know, I told my media publicist that I was there. And he actually called the publicist to make sure that I was who I said I was. So everything checks out, and he's like, look, you've spooked the monorail drivers who see you just sitting there, doing anything. If you could just let us know the next time you do this. So that was how I learned to check in with security every time I do something. But a heck of a view. Heck of a view.
You know, and train spotters are beloved in England, Len. You know, it's just sort of like...
I know, exactly. So I don't know what the problem was. Yeah, but it's like, yeah, the monorail drivers happen to notice you over and over and over again.
Speaking of having moments with Disney security, this is another instance where the folks at Disneyland Resort were very kind. They invited me out for the opening of DCA. So I was there for the 3 and 4 day long press event, and it was the night of the opening party. And so I had like a half hour, 45 minutes to kill. And I had just interviewed the gentleman, help me out here, Tim, the gentleman who rode herd on the first iteration of Grizzly River Run.
That would have been probably Chris Teets.
Okay, that's it exactly. Okay. And so, you know, I had a lovely interview with him, and he was explaining how it operated, and, you know, and at one point mentioned that we have this drop point. We actually have somebody in a control booth at the top that's, you know, carefully hidden. It's a bit of rock work, but if you know where to look, you know where the booth is. And so, all right, so what ends up happening is I've got a half hour to kill before the party. I figured I haven't ridden this attraction yet on this trip. I should do that. So I'm the only, but again, it's a half hour before the party, so I'm the only one in the raft. And so, the raft climbs up the load hill, and, you know, there's only one raft ahead of me. And they get to the drop point, and something goes wrong. They get stopped there at that point. And
the raft in front of you.
The raft in front of me. And okay. The thing of it is that there's a couple in the raft ahead of me, and I don't know if he was having an anxiety attack or if it was a cardiac event or that sort of thing, but the guy is suddenly in trouble. And the wife is sort of gesturing frantically, just like yelling help, and then turns to me and goes, help. And I go, well, wait a minute. I know there's a control booth right over there. You know, because I look at it, it's exactly as Chris Teets described it. I mean, it's one of these things where it's like a duck blind, you know, but it just so I unclip my safety belt. And I want to start by saying, don't do this at home,
don't
kids.
Do
or even don't do this in the park, kids. All right.
Jim Hill is a trained professional.
There we go. All right. So I unclip my belt and I see, well, there's a rock there, there's the edge. And so I rock to edge, and there's a path. You know, as soon as you get it past the rock, there's a path. And I walk up to the booth, and there's this teenager in the booth
who is completely surprised.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Never mind the guys having the cardiac event in the boat. The raft. I damn near killed the teenager in the room.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? And it's like, well, there's a guy in the booth that's having, the next raft, he's having an issue. Can you call down to security? Get somebody up. All right, I'm doing that now, Anarka. All right, I'm going to get back in my raft. He's like, oh, God, no.
No, you're not.
And you stay here.
It's going to be one cardiac event that kills three people. The guy having the heart attack, you for doing and the kid. God.
And that was the thing. So I stay up there for like 5 minutes, and suddenly there is this very stern Disney security person who now walks me down the mountain. And the thing is, it's a wonderful path. You know, you get to see a lot of cool things, but we're down at the base, and there's the area manager, who's there, there at the bottom. And he looks at me, and looks at my press conditioner, looks at the press conditioner, and says, I can't throw this guy out of the park. He's here for the press event. And I explained the situation. He's like, well, you should go to your party and under his breath before I kill you. And so, but the interesting thing, final grace note for the story, there had to be some sort of mechanical issue, because there were rafts all the way around the attraction that had stopped dead. And where I came off the attraction, there was this poor family in the geyser field that were pleading.
We
have to get off of this because we're drowning. And there's a cast member standing on the shore like, we're going to to get the ride going in just a sec. And on the radio to the effect of, can we turn off the geysers? Does anybody know how to turn off the geysers? And so
it's going to have a 600% fatality rate.
All right. Speaking of giving somebody a heart attack, this is a story that Mr. Shule shared while we were, again, working on this month's Disney Impact about Rock and Roller Coaster. And this story, Jim, dates from you're literally eyeballing the site, right? About where the attraction's going
to
be built?
Well, yeah. And it's kind of comes back to this. When you're a young Imagineer and someone tells you to do something, you do it. And so this day they said, well, you need to go and look at the site for Rock and Roller Coaster. We know where it's going to go. We know how it's going to look. But we really need you to approve that location and orientation. There isn't a lot to change, but we need you to sign off. How do I do that? Great. Well, you see the tall building with the tower, Hollywood Tower sign on it? You're going to go up there. Okay, I'm not fond of heights, but I guess I can go up there. No. You have to go up there, up the secret hatch, go outside, and you see that balcony on the exterior of the building that says Hollywood Tower Hotel? That's where you're going to stand, because that's where you need to take your documentation from.
Mm.
And so, again, you know, I'm going through the, well, can I have a safety spiel first? You know, a little orientation? We'll give you that. Can I have the cute orange vest? Yeah, we'll give you one of those, too. So, you know, I go up there and I crawl through the hatch. And when they say hatch, it was, exactly that. I mean, you could shove a couple rabbits through, but not anything larger. And so I'm standing out there during park open. Park is operating. Tower is operating. And I'm standing on the balcony. And I'm looking and they're talking to me in an earpiece because, you know, people on the ground are calling me up and standing there on the balcony. And they ask me, well, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? And I'm answering them. And then I hear this scream, and I look, and directly behind me, 5 feet down, the doors to the elevator shaft have just opened, because the elevator cars that go up and down Tower of Terror, well, one of them is there in the position about to drop. Now, normally, most guests are primed to look out and down, except for this one 12-year-old boy who was in that car that day, and he's looking around, he looks down. He looks out, and then he looks up to see this man standing within an arm's reach of him directly overhead. And he releases his blood-curdling scream. But, you know, as you know, Tower Terror, the doors close. And so I can hear this.
He only screams for a second.
I hear this scream echoing down through the tower. And God knows what he did to all the other guests who were riding with him that day. But
The thing that I love about this is he's probably screaming at his parents, I saw a man. But you guys remember the Twilight Zone episode where it's a guy on a
plane? Yes!
The guy on the plane.
I was hoping you'd say that the William Shatner episode, that there's a man out of the wing. You know,
Neither William Shatner or the William Shatner role in the movie when they remade it.
Have you followed up with this child to see if he's out of therapy by now? Or?
Well, you know, I asked what should I do when I got downstairs, and they said, you know, we'll let Marty take care of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Marty Sklar is here for reasons like, for times just like this.
But at some point, we need to share some of the photos you took up there, because Len, you'd love this, because what's interesting is, yes, Jim has amazing shots of the animators parking lot where they built Rock and Roller Coaster next to the Florida Studio, but equally interesting is you've got, had they just begun site prep for Fantasmic Hollywood?
Well, they did site, that was a twofer project. They did the site prep for Fantasmic and Hollywood, but they were also working on the David Copperfield restaurant.
Oh, out in front of the park.
Yeah, the one that you could have entered through the going through the park or from outside the park.
What year was this?
98, 99, I want to
say. Okay, so 98 makes sense because Animal Kingdom's opening and they've got Rainforest Cafe right out in front. So the idea of restaurant right in front of the entrance that you can get to from the park, the idea is shared among two parks.
That's it, exactly. And in fact, Disney... they were supposed to be one built. In fact, Len, the next time you make it down to Times Square, If you go one block up to the north, headed toward Central Park, there's an Italian restaurant that faces, I want to say, the TKS booth.
Wait, there's an Italian restaurant in Midtown Manhattan? Are you sure?
Well, I mean,
that one? Oh, that one.
Oh, okay, that one. Ahead. Okay. All right.
That one.
Okay. But what's interesting about this building is if you go up to the outside of this building, look up like three floors up at the facade of this thing. This is where Copperfield's Magic Underground was supposed to, the New York one was supposed to be built. They got as far as finishing the exterior of the building. And so what's amazing is you can see all of the, you know, the artificial cracks in the brickwork and that sort of thing, as if something powerful and magical was inside of the structure. And I mean, Jim, did you ever see any of the stuff they prepped for Magic Underground? Because it's an amazing story. They had, like for example, for 15 minutes out of every hour, you know, it's just a normal looking building. But then suddenly there would be this sort of Rube Goldberg moment where neon signs all over the building would start to collapse in on one another. And then at the end of this 15 minute long cycle, the neon signs would come together and form the words Magic Underground.
Yeah, was it just a fabulous idea? I mean, the whole concept behind it was just to, you know, to bring magic. And I remember they're talking about, can we make this building float? Can, how would we do that?
Wow. So like 20 years before Pandora, 25 years before Pandora.
No, it is an absolute amazing story that we have to do at some point, because it was literally one of these things where I got to talk with the guys who ran the scenic shop up in Yonkers, and they had literally just finished the pieces that were going to go into the New York restaurant, which, again, the gimmick was that the restaurant, you're sitting inside of the warehouse where the pieces that will ultimately form the Statue of Liberty are being stored. So, you know, you'd have your table like in the crook of the elbow, or, you know, seated inside of the crown. And they were about to load the finished pieces onto the truck to drive them down to Times Square for installation. And the word came down, hold up, they ran out of money and the project's dead. So, but no, great, great, great story. But speaking of great, great stories, I love that poor, terrified child who's probably, again, still in therapy somewhere.
So, still in therapy.
There we go.
Yeah. So, well, we'll throw that in the pile for a future Unpacked.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, Jim, Jim Schull, if you've got some photos, send them in and we'll throw them in the show notes. All right, folks, that's going to do it for the show today. You can help support our show by subscribing over at patreon.com/JimHillMedia, where we're posting exclusive shows every week. And Jim Schull, remind me, what's the show for this week?
Len, this week is going to be our Disney Unpacked question and answer show, where we answer the questions of interested viewers and listeners who are commenting on our last show, Disney Unpacked. And this one was all going to be about Rock and Roller Coaster, I believe.
All right, that'll be great. So folks, check it out at patreon.com/JimHillMedia. On next week's show, Jim Hill continues the story of the last huge Magic Kingdom transformation project, when Disney proposed Pixie Hollow for Fantasyland, and we ended up with Storybook Circus. You can find more of Jim at jimhillmedia.com and more of me, Len, at touringplans.com. Jim Schull, where can people find more of you?
Well, as always, if I'm not here at my desk, I'm probably over at Jim Schull on Twitter, or X, or jimschull@.com.
And we're produced spectacularly by Eric Hersey, who'll be sharing his secret oatmeal crisp recipe, as well as hints for making your own scones, jams, and jellies at the 2024 Lapine Rhubarb Festival on Saturday, June 15th, 2024, at the Lapine Senior Activity Center, that's just around the corner from Three Rivers Archery Park, which I feel compelled to mention, in beautiful downtown Lapine, Oregon. We'll put the archery range next to the senior center. What could possibly go wrong? While Eric's doing that, please go onto iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim and Jim, this is Len. We'll see you on the next show.